Recording in progress.
Okay, so let us begin. This is our fourth of five sessions. Baruch Hashem, I has been struggling with a virus. Wasn't sure we'd be able to do it this evening, but I'm feeling better. And I think the material we're discussing is quite important. But I just realized I left my notes upstairs, so give me one moment to get my notes. Sorry. So all throughout this program, from the very beginning, we have been saying that the Menuchas HaNefesh is the optimal state of mind by which one can develop a relationship to discover your Beshert. And we have said over many times, and we'll be here one more time, we understand the meaning of Menuchas HaNefesh through five different dimensions of ourselves. It's the quality of our relationships, our thoughts, our feelings, our physiology, and our behavior. Until now, we have focused purely on the cognitive or thoughts and some behavioral and some emotional dimensions. We've gone over fact, how to quiet thoughts, pages, how to elevate self-esteem, flag, how to deal with life's tribulations and nisyonos, and golden threads, how kind of a way of maintaining your focus as to what your mission is in life. And all this contributes to what we call the neshama state of mind. Tonight, we're going to go into the realm of physiology and behavior. And because in every new situation, whether you're going to camp, first time sleepaway camp, or maybe you're going to Eretz Yisrael, or you're changing schools or a neighborhood, parents are moving and you're moving with them, new friends. All of these changes in life create significant feelings of anxiety. Some of us are kind of able to quiet them and live with them, and some we find that they're very unsettling. And the symptoms can be quite staggering and endless. I remember I have a set of Shulchan Aruch here, which is enormous. It's leather bound. It's a massive set of Sforim, which I can never use because every time I try to use them, I can't carry them. So this Shulchan Aruch was purchased as a gift quite a few years ago from someone who was having a very hard time getting engaged. And there were a number of medical issues, family issues, different kinds of things. A very special young lady. And every time someone would date her and kind of reveal some of the complexities of her life, they would kind of get scared and run away, and she was really suffering. So she had begun to gone out with someone from a different country, from South Africa. And he liked her very much, and no matter what she told him, he was determined to get engaged. And she could hardly believe that somebody would really want her. I mean, she was a very fine person. She was an educator, a special ed professional, and dedicated to her children. Everyone loved her. Really a very fine person. But she had these challenges in her life. But he was determined. And he said, no matter what, he said, Shandy, or that was her name, I think, you know what, I want to marry you. And she was overwhelmed. But then, and he wanted to take her to South Africa to get engaged. And she called me the morning of her plane that she was supposed to fly to South Africa. And she said, I'm going to South Africa, but I have a problem. I can't get on the plane. I've never had a problem with the fear of flying, but obviously all this has been such a turmoil for me, I can't do it. And I cannot get on the plane. And I taught her something, and I'll teach that to you later. And Baruch Hashem, she got to the plane. She used what I taught her. She met her future mother-in-law. She came back. And then a few weeks later, I get this enormous carton outside of my house with these huge sperm. But it's not the first time, and it won't be the last time that I have seen individuals, particularly at crucial moments when they are either getting engaged or going to a vort or going to their chasana, where they are overwhelmed with emotions and anxiety that wreak havoc with their with their whole level of functioning. It could be in palpitations and shortness of breath or headaches or stomach aches. I remember one young lady telling me, how can I get engaged? I was with him last night and I wanted to retch. And to her that meant that the feeling that she felt nauseous was a proof positive. It could only mean that I have to walk away from this relationship and break the engagement. It wasn't the case. It was a physiological reaction to anxiety. That's all it was. And Baruch Hashem, she was smart enough not to, and she got married. Now, there are two types of anxiety that we're going to be working with this evening, both of which are very important. One is more prevalent than the other. One deals with social anxiety, which means that, let's say I'm walking into a meeting and I kind of feel that people are looking at me, even though they're not, because I'm not the most important person there, but I feel that. Or I'm on a date and I feel somewhat uneasy. Or if I'm walking into a classroom, I'm a teacher and I feel uneasy. Or if I'm a bar mitzvah boy and I'm going to give my shetel and I'm feeling shaky. Or I'm in a shul and I'm going up for an aliyah, or I'm going to daven for the amid, and I start to feel somewhat unsure of myself and a little bit shaky. And all of these things, right? They're not debilitating in the sense that I'm going to say, go get the aliyah, I'm going to give the speech, my bar mitzvah shetel, I'm going to go on the date and I'm going to talk, right? I'm going to talk to the parent of my most difficult student at a PTA meeting, or my principal, without falling apart, right? I know I'm going to do it, but I really don't feel very good about it, and I'm a little bit uneasy, quite uneasy, and I can feel, you know, almost like I give the example, you think a little bit of voltage, right? That kind of goes through your body. Now, I call this, you know, I call this uneasiness a lack of internal balance, right? Or internal homeostasis, if you want to use that word, or equilibrium. Someone told me that when they go into a lower lane or base ovel, because he himself had lost a parent at an early age, even though he's much older now, he'll, when he goes into a base ovel, he gets very jittery. He goes in, he smiles, he sits down, or doesn't smile, but he just feels very jittery. And when he has to say Hamokim Menachem, half the time he messes up what he's trying to say because he starts to mumble the words, because he's Magam game, as they say. So there's something I teach that I believe I've taught it to many, many people, and I want to teach it to you, which is very good for dating or for any area of life. But I developed it originally for dating because that's when I first saw the need. And it is called centering. Now, centering is not something we think about, because when we're with somebody or we're going up to the Amid for an aliyah or to make a bracha or walking into a classroom or giving a speech, so it's not that we can talk to ourselves, because the feeling of being unbalanced is a feeling that we experience throughout our bodies. And the body doesn't really react very well to logic. It really doesn't, not impressed with logic. If the body is feeling tense, it's not going to react to logic. So it needs more sensory, or it needs more of a physical way of calming itself down. Now, centering is something we do with our hands. And I'll explain what it is in a moment. And we're going to do a centering meditation, which is a very... And I teach the meditation not to have you do it all the time. Hearing it once is enough. But when you do it once, you get a better sense of what centering is all about. So let me discuss centering and how we use our hands. There are many people who you will notice, and maybe you're one of them, or maybe I'm one of them, or right, we'll do nervous things with our hands. We'll bite our nails, or we'll gesticulate. I can't stand that person. You know what that person does to me, right? And you see that person's, not that they're aware of it or you're aware of it, it's just so natural, but it's clear there are some people who are, you know, maybe they're always looking at their watch or looking at their phone. They're always in a state of distractedness, but mostly the hands. And Chazal talks about Yodayim Askonios, because we have to wash our hands because we're always putting them someplace where they don't belong. But centering in particular is something that generates anxiety. For example, if I'm walking into a meeting, or if I'm with people that are really getting me very upset, so my mind is exploding with upsetness. These people are really getting me crazy. Now, there's a limit as to how far my mind can expand. So what I do is I use my hands, right? And you guys are driving me crazy. Just stop driving me crazy. And you can see it in my hands, right? Now, which means that the tension is going from my hands, my head, to my hands, back to my head, back to my hands. It kind of is a feedback loop, and it just intensifies. Now, so there are other ways that we use our hands. If you ever watch a conductor of a symphony orchestra, he'll say, you know, da-da-da-da, and he'll have the baton, and that baton will hold so delicately, or a violinist, right? Or someone threading a needle, or a surgeon, right? Hands can do things which are exquisitely accurate and unerring. And also hands can act in this wild, wild way. It depends on whether we're focused on what we're doing with them. Now, hands become a very important element in a neshama state of mind. Why is that? Because many people, they feel kind of nervous in different situations. They feel tense. And in feeling tense, they will use their hands to show their tension. Not that others will pick it up, but they will feel it. Not that they'll be aware of it. It's just a part of them. It's an unconscious aspect of self, this feeling of tension. It's like this low voltage thing that I was telling you about. And what we want to do is we want to learn to quiet this low voltage. We want to shut it down. We want to feel calmer. We want to be able to go up the Bar Mitzvah boy, go up and read his peshetel. We want to say the bracha by the Aliyah. We want to be, you know, we want to sit on a date. I taught one young lady centering who was afraid to go to her own vort, right? What am I going to do? I said, you're going to get centered. And she got back to me, she said, yep, I was centered the entire vort, right? It's a big difference. But I was telling you that centering becomes something that is so close to our neshama. Why? Because the neshama is very delicate. Ha-neshama shenasat tabita horahi. It's very delicate. It's very dark. It's very subtle. Now, if you take your two hands and hold them together, just don't hold them, just let them touch gently, and you can feel the warmth of your hands, right? You can move them around a little bit. They can be on top, on the bottom. When your hands are touching, you are aware that you have two hands. Now, if you were to take your finger and put it on your nose, your finger is touching your nose, but your nose is not touching your finger, right? A nose doesn't touch. A nose is touched. Why? Because the finger has the ability, the dexterity to touch, right? Right? The violin does not play. The violin is played by the bow, which is held by the hands of the violinist, right? Now, when two hands are touching together gently, right, in a sense, there's a difference between somebody who's very nervous and digging their nails into each other, right? Right, you can kind of imagine, right? And the difference between that and two hands touching together very, very gently. As gentle as the hands or the palm or the back of a palm of a mother on the face of her newborn infant. Can you imagine how delicate and gentle that is? That's a delicate and gentle touch. Centering is a way to recreate that gentle and delicate touch. And by doing so, reminds you that you have a neshama, which is very delicate and gentle. And by doing so, when you remind yourself that you have a neshama, you will find that it's so much easier to keep yourself in a gentle and calmer state of mind. Now, this particularly works for people who are going into a situation where you know you're going to get nervous. Right? So this young lady on her vort, she knew where she was going, or a teacher into a classroom, or somebody going into a shul, or a base of us, base of us, or a date. And how do you walk around? Well, you simply place your hands on your abdomen. It's no one can see it, no one is aware, and you are centered. Now, so let me go through a little more information about centering, and then we're going to do a centering experience, which I think will explain a lot to you, because a lot of what I'm saying must be quite puzzling, but I believe in the end you will not be puzzled, particularly when you use it. So, imagine a young kid, boy or girl, who's riding a bicycle without training wheels. So they're holding the handlebars, and they're shaking back and forth. And sooner or later, that child is going to fall off the bike, and hopefully don't scrape their knees. So they'll get back on the bike. They'll maybe brush themselves off and go back on the bike. And after three or four times, you're going to see something remarkable. You're going to see that this child is not riding the bike, but the handlebars are not shaking back and forth. The handlebars are quite straight. It's almost like a child in the back of a car watching a parent drive the car with one hand on the steering wheel. And for the child, it's as if the parent is not moving their hands at all. It's as if the hands are stiffly on the steering wheel and nothing is being moved. Now, we know it's not true. The steering wheel is being moved by micro-movements. But there's such a balance there that it doesn't appear that the hands are being, that the hands are moving the steering wheel, or that the child is riding, is moving his hands on the bars of the bike, on the handlebars of the bike. And that's what centering is about. Centering is about learning to maintain that sense of inner balance. And when you go into a situation, let's say you have a friend who and you want to tell that person something, and you're quite a little bit uneasy about how to say it. And you walk into that meeting and you're centered, you'll find that you're much more comfortable and much more clear about what you're saying. So let me go through a centering meditation with you. It doesn't take very, very long, but I think it'll explain a lot when you do it. So I'm going to ask you to place your hands together in any way you wish. You can put one palm on top of the next. You can have your finger pads touch each other, right? All 10 of them. You can put one hand above the other, right? The palm to the back of a hand. So any way where your hands are touching, just let them touch very, very gently. Right? And I'd like you to close your eyes. And if you wish, you can place your hands on your abdomen. And as your hands are touching each other very gently, you realize that the hands have this uncanny capacity to be so gentle, so that a mother can touch the face of her newborn child. And the hands are so delicate that you understand that when your hands are touching so gently, it reminds you that you have an neshama, because each one of us has a very gentle and delicate neshama at the heart of who we are. It never goes away. So when we touch our hands together so gently, it brings us back to that awareness of the gentle neshama in each of us. And I'd like you to imagine that you are walking in a meadow, and it's a very beautiful, green, verdant meadow. And you can feel the summer sun above you, and you can see the trees swaying in the distance. You can smell the freshness of the air and the flowers all around you. You can hear the birds and see them elegantly in flight. And you come across a pond, a white, with white lily pads sitting so peacefully on top of the pond. And the pond is filled with crystal clear waters. And as you bend down, you can touch the waters of the pond. And they're so inviting that you enter into the pond and feel the warmth of the waters surrounding you. It's a very beautiful, calming, soothing, comforting experience, almost like a child being in its mother's arms. And then imagine that you're floating to the surface of the waters. So your back is to the warmth of the waters, and your face is to the warmth of the summer sun. And you realize that as you're floating in the warmth of the waters, there is a neshama that floats within you. It fills you, it touches nothing on a physical level, because it's not physical. And have your hands, as they touch together, and remind you that when your hands touch so gently, you remember that you have this gentle neshama within you. It's a very reassuring, calming, comfortable, peaceful place to be. And you can imagine yourself, perhaps, being with a friend while you're being centered, being with a family member, being with someone maybe with whom you work, who is kind of can cause you to feel somewhat ill at ease, but if you're centered, this centering enables you to feel so much calmer. Being on a date, just feeling this calm sensation, knowing that your hands are touching, and as they touch, they remind you of this core of this, of self, at the center of who you are, your neshama. And whenever you're ready, you can close your eyes, open your eyes, or you can keep them closed for as long as you wish. Just exploring the wonders of centering, and think about its limitless applications for yourself and others. Good. So that is our skill of centering. If you practice it, and you don't do the meditation, you can certainly listen to it again. It's not necessary. But if you kind of walk into a situation tomorrow that would normally cause you to feel somewhat ill at ease, and get centered. How do you get centered? Just by having your hands touch. Because you now know what its potential is. And some people like to have their hands one on top of the other by their abdomen or other ways, but you'll feel a significant difference in your calmness. There's one caveat about centering, and that if you're in a situation which is giving you a hard time, which is really has a potential of making you feel very nervous, and you go into it and you're not centered when you go in, getting centered may help you do some damage control. However, if you're centered before you go in, your situation there will be highly improved than what it was would be otherwise. You understand that concept? Once you go in and you're centered before you go in, you're creating a much more controlled situation for yourself. And this you centering is only used on an interpersonal level, although I will tell people if I'm dealing with men who have a hard time, you know, pardon the expression, but I think it's important to know going through a crowd of women, right? Grand Central Station. Get centered. Get centered and realize that you have a neshama. Don't just think about it, feel it, right? And this enables them to kind of get through, cut through all the grease and get through these situations with a minimum of distractedness and other things that throw them off. So that is the skill of the guiding light of centering. Hopefully we'll have a chance to spend a few minutes later if you have any questions. Now there's one more guiding light I want to teach you, and that is what I call the pulse of life. Now I should have asked you in advance something which I'm going to ask you to do now, but it's not necessary at this point, but you should learn it. The pulse of life is a way of dealing with intense anxiety. Intense anxiety means can't get on that plane. I'm just having a panic attack. I woke up in the middle of the night and I'm about to get engaged tomorrow and I can't do it. I want to jump ship. I want to run to Timbuktu, right? I'm supposed to meet my shviga tomorrow, or I'm supposed to go out on a date tomorrow with this, and I know he's going to propose, and I can't do it, right? And I'm just going to pieces. I have a headache. I can't breathe, right? And just get out of my life, right? It's quite a common phenomenon. I see it all the time. Now, the pulse of life is a skill that I came across quite accidentally. Nothing is accidentally. Everything was something of Islam. But I can't even begin to tell you how many people it has helped over the years. And I teach it through a meditation. And what I apologize before that I could not tell you is that I should have asked those of you who do not know how to find your pulse to teach somebody to help you find your pulse, to have somebody teach you how to find your pulse. But that doesn't get in the way of learning what you have to learn. And you can find somebody to teach you how to find it some other time. But if you know how to find your pulse, particularly if you're a lifeguard or somebody involved with health, or you just know how to find it, then it's a cinch. But if you don't worry, we'll do the exercise and you'll find somebody to help you and then you'll really fully appreciate it. So I discovered the pulse of life many years ago when somebody came over to me in shul who was having a very severe reaction. It was a time that the American space shuttle, Discovery, I forgot what it was, had crashed that night, mostly during Shabbos, right? And this person during davening imagined, remembered a dream that, incredible, had a dream about this thing burning up in space. And this person was davening, Shemoneh Esrei, remember it was Rosh Chodesh Adar, because he was Adar Rishon, it was February of 2000, I think, something like that. And he couldn't, and he just was frozen. Couldn't say a word. And then he came over to me and explained what happened. He had imagined this space shuttle burning up in front of him, and all the people in it, and he got so frightened he couldn't talk. And I had tried many things to help him, but eventually I came across something that I had been fooling around without being aware of, is how to use my pulse in a more effective way. And this really helped him. And over the years, it's helped. This is what I taught this young lady to get on the plane to go to South Africa, the pulse of life. So let me describe what the pulse of life is and how to use it, and if you should ever need it. And most people, at some point or another, need it, right? And it's very helpful. The pulse of life represents a dialogue between two parts of our lives. Our pulse, which is our guf, and a white light, which is our neshama. And the two are in diametric contradiction to each other, the guf and the neshama. And the pulse of life attempts to bring them both together. So when a person feels that he cannot breathe, or she cannot breathe, or that my heart is beating 1,000 beats a minute, right? I'm ready to take off for the moon because he's going to propose, right? Or we're going to meet his parents and I'm afraid what's going to happen, or whatever the case may be, or he's going to propose tomorrow and or I don't know what to do, and I have a headache, and I'm sweating, and I have cramps, and all these other things, all of which are physiological symptoms that are related to one's minuchus hanefesh, right? So the pulse of life is a way of regaining control over our body, over that element, our physiology, right? The way our heart beats, the way we handle tension in our head, the way we breathe more easily, right? Someone told me that he had a terrible cough, and didn't know how to contain it, and what he did didn't go away, and finally he learned to contain it through the pulse of life. So the pulse of life is done through a meditation, and we're going to do the meditation in a few moments. And I'm going to ask you in this meditation to find your pulse. Now, if you cannot find your pulse, you don't know how, I'll try to show you how. I'll give you one minute to try to find it. And if not, don't worry. Just do the exercise with us as if you're finding it, and then somebody will teach you how to find your pulse. I am very, very well aware that many people have spent their entire lives without ever once realizing they have a pulse going on, but it's true, because if you didn't have a pulse, you wouldn't be alive, right? It is your heartbeat. It is a sound of this inner miracle of life, of blood rushing through your life. Now, the way we find our pulse, I'll show you. There are three places to find your pulse. The primary way we use in our palms, right, over here. And the best place to find it is, here's your thumb, right? You see your thumb? And if you go right down, and you'll feel a kind of a crevice over here. And if you take your other thumb and touch it gently, you may find your pulse. We also have a pulse in our neck called the carotid artery. And we also have a pulse in our temporal lobe, right? Over here, which is right above where our glasses sit, right? There's some veins there, and you can touch them and you can feel them. That's the most powerful place to experience your pulse of life, by your temples, right? right? But your temple's over here. But I usually suggest that we go with the thumb, which it means. So you take one thumb, right? And you find a indentation underneath the other thumb, right? Underneath the other thumb. You see that over here? And if you kind of close your eyes and just feel gently, you may feel your pulse. Not everyone will, because when you haven't felt it throughout your life, it's not so easy to feel it the first time. But you will. It's there, guaranteed. Otherwise, you would not be participating in this program. Okay? So we're going to do a pulse of life experience. It's going to be a very generic one. But you can use it if you're feeling very tense. If you wake up at night with a panic attack, once a chas v'sholem, or you're having shortness of breath, or you have a headache, it works marvelously well with headaches, or even with an upset stomach, when you kind of, because it's precipitated by a kind of feeling of whatever it is, by the person you're dating or about to get engaged, and it just kind of makes you feel very upset. So with that, we shall begin. And once again, we're going to do the pulse of life. I'm assuming that you're finding your pulse, but even though you don't find it, just go ahead with it. Just go through the motions. It won't make a difference. You'll find the meditation very helpful anyway. And then sooner or later, you'll find someone to help you find your pulse. Okay, so I'd like you to close your eyes and feel your pulse. I'm going to give you 1 minute to see if you can feel your pulse. Remember, you're taking your pulse, let's assume of your left hand, your thumb of your left hand, and placing it in that indentation beneath the thumb of your right hand. Now that you have found your pulse or attempting to find your pulse, imagine I'd like you to count 5 beats of your pulse to yourself silently, and then take a nice, easy, full breath. So if you have not found your pulse, just kind of make-believe, put your thumb there. Your thumb ding there is a very soft, sensitive area. It'll be helpful. And after taking a count of 5 beats, I'd like you to take a nice, easy, full breath. And once again, count 5 breaths of your, 5 counts of your pulse, followed by a nice, easy, full breath. And lastly, I'd like you to repeat that process 3 more times. So all in all, you will have counted your pulse a total of 5 times, each containing 5 counts, followed by a full breath. And permit the 5th and final breath to be fuller and deeper than the previous breaths. Now, I'd like you to imagine, after you've made these 5 counts and 5 breaths, I'd like you to imagine that just above your head, or maybe even sitting on your head, or maybe even sitting in your forehead, there's a warm, gentle, white light. It may be like a satiny pillow, or just a warm light that's soft to the touch, a flame that you can actually touch in its softness, but it's warm and gentle. And you realize that this represents your neshama, and it sits right above your head or in your head. And if you were a man, it would be where you wear your tefillin. But this is where it is. Because Hashem tells us, Chazal tells us, HaNeshama Shebamochi, the Neshama in my mind. So you realize that there is a Neshama just above your mind. And this Neshama, this white light, this warm white light, has many dreams and aspirations for you that you're going to find your true Neshama life partner, that you're going to raise a wonderful family, that you're going to do wonderful things, acts of chesed for other people in your life, that you're going to fulfill all your dreams of goodness and caring for others, for your own family and others. These are the aspirations of your white light that sits just above your head. And I'd like you to imagine, or actually to feel at this point, your pulse once again. Because you realize that the neshama in your mind brings in life, chiyus, from the shemayim into your whole being. And you can feel this presence of life within you when you feel your pulse, because the pulse is a inner river of miracles. Stretches endless distances within your very being, filling your life with your whole being with the nurturance of the nutrition that it needs, flowing through your body from your heart every moment. And the sound of the pulse is the sound of life flowing through you. An incredible miracle, every moment feeding 7 trillion cells of your body. And you also realize that the pulse can also be a messenger of your heart. So when you are feeling tense, perhaps you're feeling anxious, perhaps you'll have a headache, perhaps you'll have a stomach ache, perhaps your heart will be beating rapidly, or your whole body will feel as if it's electrified with tension, which is so difficult to tolerate. Whatever these may be, the pulse can be a messenger of the heart. And when the heart is troubled, you'll feel it in the pulse. And you'd so much like to quiet it down, to feel calm inside, not to feel the headache, not to feel the tension, not to feel the stomach ache or the palpitations of the heart. You want to feel calm and serene. And I'd like you to imagine that the pulse has a voice, and it says to the white light, it says, "You white light, you have so much wisdom, so much chokhmah. You are the neshama. Please teach me how to feel quieter, calmer, smoother, more comfortable, more tranquil. I surrender everything I am to you, but just teach me how to feel this calmness within me." And as your pulse says this to your white light, you can see a mountain in the distance. And the mountain in the distance is in the early morning, and the sun is not yet shining, and it's filled with ice and snow. But the sun begins to rise, and the ice and snow on the mountain begin to melt and trickle down the mountain in rivulets of pure, crystal, life-giving waters. And as the waters are flowing down the mountain, turning everything they touch into green, into life forms, into forms of beauty and vegetation, you can feel the tension within you begin to melt, begin to drain from your fingertips, begin to drain from every pore of your body. All the tension drains and flows away. And as it does, this white light in your brain is now as soft and warm as liquid honey, and it begins to move downwards in your mind, behind your eyes and ears. It's soft and warm and golden now, and you can feel this warm, soft feeling moving down to your jaws and your neck and your shoulders, your fingertips, moving down your torso, moving down. You can feel the warmth in your stomach, and the tension in your stomach seems to just be so serene now. And you're down to your knees and your ankles and your toes, so you're from the top of your head to your fingertips, to your toes, you can feel the white light filling you with a calmness and a gentleness. And whatever it was that was frightening you, causing you to feel tension in the past, this all disappeared, all gone away. Traveled far, far away, leaving you with yourself and the white light within you. And whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes, or you can keep them closed for as long as you wish. Okay. And that is the pulse of life experience. Now, and this is something I teach many people, particularly if they're going through a difficult time, at various stages in a dating relationship. They get scared, they get worried. It can be a remarkable, remarkable benefit. Now, so we're kind of running out of time, but I would certainly, if any of you have any questions about centering or pulse of life, please feel free to ask them now. We can spend a few minutes with them. Anyone? I think you can hit number 6 on your phone, or you can, I believe you can unmute yourselves, or send me a chat if you wish. Yeah. Okay. So, we're going to have Bez Hashem one more session, which will be next week. And that session is going to be on 4 guiding lights in relationship building. We have, until now, not dealt with relationship building. But once you have mastered all of these, which I have shared with you until now, the relationship building element is so powerful. It has so much... so many possibilities that I feel I can teach them to you, and you can use them very effectively as you build relationships that will, Be'ez Hashem, lead to marriage. So, if there are no questions, I believe is a good time to say good evening, and I'm pleased I was able to do this session, and Hashem helped me with my virus, Baruch Hashem. And I wish you all a very good night. Kol tov, bye-bye.